All right, welcome to another edition of the Home Studio Craft Podcast. I am Scott.
I am Tippins.
Tippins.
How's it going?
Good. Good, buddy. Good, man.
What are we talking about today?
We are going to talk about the 11 ways or 11 ways to create more depth in your mix. So, so let's get started.
All right. So where would you start? Like, you know, everyone talks about wanting to have a wide mix. They want everything to sound massive. How do you accomplish
that? I mean, it's there's obviously 11 different ways, and maybe more, but we're just going to touch on 11 different ways to create some depth in your mix. So start off with panning, right? Panning may seem like an obvious thing, but it's critical. It's foundational, right? So, let me ask you, right? When you're mixing, how do you think about panning, like the placement of instruments within the stereo image? How do you think about it?
So my YouTube educated, which is not a lot of education, but what I've been doing, at least, you know, I see a lot of people go back and forth on drum panning, which will be interesting to get your take on, because
sure,
some people say, you know, it's pointless to do things like not all the way left or all the way right in the middle, setting it to 25 in Ableton rather than
sure,
50 on drums. So
right,
a lot of people argue about that online.
What are they saying?
You know, some people's will essentially, like, you know, put certain symbols left and right, obviously,
uh-huh,
which is kind of, I kind of do that. A lot of the programs I use automatically do that.
Sure.
So I do that, but, you know, some people do say, like, they just put it down the middle, like drums.
All the drums right down
the
middle.
Yeah, I've seen that. And I think it could be, like, more EDM people or something. Like, maybe not rock genres,
yeah,
per se, but I have seen that. And then
mm-hmm,
bass down the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
Basically always.
Yeah.
Guitars, like, I do left, right, and then a lot of times a center track as far as, like, rhythm. But, sometimes I've just done left and right. So
when you're saying, like, left and right, are you just, like, a little bit off center, or you're, like, almost where it's like that,
like, hard panning?
Yeah. All the way right, all the way left.
That's what
interesting.
That's what I've been doing for guitar. And then
yeah,
like down the middle too, if I feel like it's not clouding things up, or I want to, like, thicken it up. But
mm-hmm,
I don't know if that's right, you know, but it sometimes,
I mean, I don't think there is any right?
Yeah.
Any right or wrong. I think that, depending on, like, the genre that you're working in. So, like, in a pop context, like, down the middle, maybe it's could interfere with the vocal a little,
yeah,
but you can just, you know, just take that off. It doesn't have to be much off, you know? So, I mean, for me personally, when I think about panning, I'm thinking about, I kind of try to put myself in as if I was, like, on stage or, like, in the audience watching a band perform,
mm-hmm,
with whatever instrumentation that I've got going
and that's
on.
I think the argument people say, the drum people who are talking about putting it down in the middle, make kind of is, like, you know, if you're in the audience, that would essentially be right there, right? Like, it would be down the middle. But I still keep, like, the cymbals and
right,
stuff,
but you still have, like, the, you know, the mixer, right?
Mm.
Mixing the live sound,
yeah,
and, you know, and you've got,
okay,
your mics on, your toms, you know, kicks,
yeah,
snare,
exactly,
right? You know, your overheads.
Yeah.
So, and however that person, I mean, if you're right there, like, at stage, yeah, it's going to sound like that, because you're probably hearing more off the monitors than you are from the speakers. But
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one thing, it's kind of that when I started, I always take and I put my snare a little off, like if I'm looking at my DAW, a little off to the left, and the hi-hat with that too. And it's kind of the opposite of where it most people do it. Most people are, like, on the right, you know what I mean? Put the snare and the hi-hat, because that's the way a drummer would be if they were on stage.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? So it's
So why do you so do that? Like, just,
you know what? That's a good question. I don't know why it started, but it just, it doesn't really matter, right? Yeah. When you're listening to it.
But those nuances, little nuances of things being different add up.
Yeah. So I don't know why I just always do that. And then, like guitars, you know, depending on the effect you want, you know, and just, you know, putting them out like that wide stereo sound on the left and right. The acoustic I'll typically have up towards the vocalist a little bit more. But that changes, you know, with every mix, you know, that might be changing various degrees. But I've never done it where it's kind of like that panned, like hard right or hard left. I've never tried that. You know, maybe with like a guitar line or something like that. But I think that's cool. I have to
so
check that
lead
out.
Guitar, you do down the middle basically all the time.
Right? If there's no vocal going on,
yeah,
I would do it down the middle. You know, sometimes unless there's like some kind of like another instrument playing in conjunction with it, like a synth or something like that, in which case I'd have them, you know, left and right a little bit. But if there's just, you know, no vocal going on, it's just a solo, right down the middle. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I try to, like, if it's like riffs or just fills or something like that, I can be like left or right with either one of that.
And you're not concerned when you're doing that about, you know, making it equal left and right at all, right? Or you're just
like
doing
a balance, like having that, like something to compensate for, like the, like guitar, if you got a guitar riff going on the right side and, you know, there's nothing. Yeah. No, I'm always aware of that. You know, but it also, you know, it also depends on the song too. So if there, you know, if it really feels like it's, you know, like lopsided, right? It's like there's too much going on the right. Yeah, I'll do that. So it's just kind of just going with your gut, just an intuitive feeling.
Because that's a good point. Struggle with it, like if, you know, it's a chorus and I want a riff, like answering the vocal or something like that. Like sometimes I do struggle with, you know, mixing those and getting them to sound right if they're down the middle. So throwing it off, that makes sense. And that sidechain compression, if you haven't seen that video, that's helped a little bit with that, I feel like. But
yeah, or as far as like playing a riff or something like that on your guitar and having it sidechain to the vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it ducks.
Sidechain
compression. Okay, so the next number two is going to be reverb. So, you know, we've talked about reverb before, obviously, and we've talked about my new favorite reverb plugin, the Valhalla. Love that thing. It's beautiful. But, you know, as far as creating depth in a mix with reverb, you know, obviously you've got like the different rooms, right? So like halls or, you know, cathedrals, things like that, they're going to, you know, give you that like far away sound, right? And then in conjunction, you know, playing not only with like the room sounds you're getting. So like if you want to, you know, have that feeling of, you know, like a live band, right? You know, so you might have like the same reverb setting on all the instruments, so it sounds like a live band, you know, playing in one room. But if you're doing like your typical, like, you know, pop music, rock mix, you know, you're gonna pick different reverbs based on the effect that you're trying to give within the context of the mix. So maybe you're gonna have like a shorter reverb, like a room reverb on, you know, on a piano, for example. And you want that to sound up a little bit closer. And then maybe you want to have like your guitars, you know, with like a hall reverb with a long pre-delay, so it sounds, you know, further away. So if you play with that pre-delay, that's going to give you, you know, the option to make it sound closer, right? Because the pre-delay is basically replicating like the response of the reverb. So if you're in a room like this and you clap your hands, that would be a really short pre-delay. But if you're in a, you know, a church or a big cathedral and you clap your hands, you get that like that longer delay.
Yeah.
So that's what the pre-delay is doing.
Yeah, okay. I'm smiling because like I've never really known what pre-delay
there
actually
you go.
Does when I'm looking at
there you
these
go.
Reverbs and
yeah.
I just gotta mess with it.
Yeah.
But it's good to know that, that it's almost like the attack, like it's almost like an attack of
it's kind of like the like I don't know if it's about the attack but the response.
Okay.
Right, it kind of delays that response. So it gives that effect of, so it helps you to do kind of like make the sound closer, like that space smaller or the space larger, like by adjusting the room in conjunction with the type of reverb that you choose, like a, you know, a hall or, you know, something like that, or plates.
And as far as like trimming off like low and high end.
Yeah. So that brings us to, well, actually we can jump ahead. Well, let's dive into delay.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So delay, you know, is similar to reverb in how you can add depth to your mix too, right? So for like a reverb, you're going to use a smaller room size and a shorter pre-delay to make the sound closer. And same thing with like a delay, right? So you use like a, you know, slap back delay to like thicken up a vocal, right? Or even on, you know, guitar, you know, picking or something like that, just to thicken that up a little bit. Or you can use, you know, I'll just use vocals as an example. Or you can use like a long delay with a short amount of feedback to kind of thicken up and give some depth to a vocal, right? Where it's not as kind of a wash like a reverb would be. So it adds another effect. And the combination of like delays and reverbs together on vocal sounds.
And explain feedback. So that's on every delay pedal, every delay plugin. I mean, we know what feedback is, but in the context of that and how it affects the sound.
It's just the amount of times that delays is going to continue to repeat, right? Okay. Like a digital delay, where an analog delay just keeps, you know, where you're looking at like at the Bucket Brigade, and it just every time it goes into that new, you know, circuit, it builds up a little more noise. That's what you hear with like an analog delay. You get that, you know, if you have a lot of repeats going on, get that noise build up, which is really cool quality.
Yeah.
But so that's all it is. So you can kind of, you know, control the delay effect to be cleaner, right? With, you know, less feedback, less repeats. So one thing that I should mention too is, and it's not a requirement, but definitely check out like a delay reverb calculator. There's some good calculators online to kind of determine, you know, the settings on your reverb, the settings on your pre-delay, or the settings on your delay and so forth, you know, if you're not using like quarter note or eighth note
selections. A delay calculator, like what would you put in, like
Much use them on reverbs, because most of the time on delays I'm working with just like the subdivision of the beat. So it's either like a 16th or a dotted eighth or an eighth or a quarter or a half. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much I'm using a time calculator for the reverbs to determine like the pre-delay and the reverb settings as far as like how long the reverb tail is going to be. And doing that to kind of keep it tight, you know what I mean? Like if it's going to basically, you know, fall off at the end of that measure or two measures, whatever that is. And, you know, once again, it's not a requirement, but if I'm trying to get something really clean, I'll do that.
And does it go based off of the tempo of the song?
Okay. Yeah, it works off the tempo. And then, you know, you can just figure out like how many. Like, so for example, if you want to set it at a certain setting, then that's for one bar. And if you want that reverb to go over two bars, you just double that, or, you know, cut it in half for, you know, half a bar.
Yeah.
But it's definitely cool. Something to explore for sure. If you haven't done it before, I would definitely recommend it.
Yeah. I could see how that would clean things up, because I have issues with my reverbs feeling messy. And
yeah, I mean, that can definitely be, that's definitely something you got to watch with reverb, right? You don't want to go like too crazy with it, because it can make things sound really muddy and just have a lack of focus.
Yeah.
Okay, so that covers delay. So let's talk about EQ. So EQ it's kind of like the foundation of anyone's mix, right? So there's a couple of things to take into consideration when you're EQing a mix. Obviously, you want to have each instrument occupy its own little sonic space within the context of the mix. And then there's other certain things that you should take into consideration as far as like filtering goes, right? So if, say, for example, you want something to sound further away, like you've, you know, you've got a synth pad, for example, right? And it happens to be really bright, like just your stock pad, whatever instrument you're using. You can actually take a low pass filter, right, a high cut, and put that on there, or maybe you even just use a little shelf where you kind of trim the high end down, you know, so going whatever, let's just say like, you know, 1K up, and then just trim it down, or wherever that the frequencies are predominant for that particular synth patch. And that will help to kind of like place that synth, you know, backwards in the mix a little bit, right? And then the other thing too you can do conversely is take a low end filter, right? So you're going to have a high pass, low cut, and then just to carve out some space from the other instruments like guitars, keyboards, and so forth, that leaves some room for like the bass and the drums, like kick drum, low tom, floor tom, something like that.
And so that'll sound further away.
Well, it's not going to, no, the really trimming off the high end is going to make things sound further away because...
The high end's
first. Yeah, because those, closer, yeah, those sounds are going to dissipate first. Like that's, like if you listen to anything in nature, you know, something that sounds far away is not, you're not going to hear those high frequencies because they dissipate quicker.
Got it.
Right? But by trimming out the low end off of other instruments, you're going to create some space, you know, for the kick and for the bass, right? Which will kind of make those things stand out a little more. They're going to be up front a little bit more. You know, you want those, like the kick and snare and stuff, to kind of come up. Moving on, we can talk about number five, volume automation. Now, this kind of is, you know, it's common sense, right? So if you've got something that's, your faders are pushed up and they're loud, it's going to sound closer. And you can also make things sound further away by just bringing down the volume. So it's, and you can play with that through automation throughout the course of the mix. So you want to push some things up, you can make them louder, right? They're going to appear closer, or just bring it back down a little bit to make them sound further away.
And you'll
away.
Do that for like different parts of the song, like the chorus or like a solo or something.
Yeah. Or, you know, whatever it demands.
Yeah,
well, I guess
whenever you want something.
Yeah, you want to kind of like, kind of make the mix, I don't know, not feel like so static, right? So you can just kind of play around with the levels, and you know, a lot of times it'll be with vocals, or some other predominant part, you know, in a verse or a chorus, something like that.
Okay.
All right. So next up we have parallel processing, and we talk about parallel processing, we're pretty much talking about vocals and reverb, right? So like you've heard of parallel compression?
Yeah.
Right? So you basically make a copy of like typically the vocal track, and then what you're going to do is like heavily compress that copied track, right? So it's going to kind of sit underneath the main vocal. And you don't have to overly compress a main vocal, right? Because if you overly compress something, it's going to make it sound flat. So it's not going to have as much dynamic range, right? And that dynamic range is going to make that instrument sound closer, right? So it's going to make it pop out more. And so the cool thing about parallel processing is you're able to thicken that part, right? Let's just use vocals for in this discussion. And still retain the dynamics of the original vocal tracks. So that's a kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, that's like the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
That's cool.
And you can also do like parallel processing with reverb. So what you can do is you can take to kind of like widen out the sound of, let's just stick with the voice, right? So, or guitar or whatever. You can take and you have a couple sends, let's say on the on a guitar part, right? So you send it to one reverb, one send to one reverb, and that reverb is panned all the way to the right, okay? And then take another send to the return track to another reverb with a totally different setting, and that one's panned all the way to the left. So you've got two return tracks containing reverb, one panned to the right and the other one panned to the left. It doesn't have to be like hard right or hard left, but you know, as much as is effective, right? So it's definitely going to be panned right, panned left. And there's two different settings. And so now you've taken that guitar part and you've really created something interesting, right? So you've got this one cool reverb sound coming out of the right channel and another cool, you know, maybe like a hall reverb in the right channel and maybe like a small room reverb in the left channel. So now you've got this really spatially interesting sound. So it helps to widen out that mix and create some more depth with that mix.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a cool thing to do.
Yeah, that's not something I've really done much of. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And
it's not something you're always going to use, but it's one more thing you can do to, you know, create an interesting mix.
And you do use that mainly on vocals or?
You can use it on anything. Okay. Yeah. Anything you want. I've never tried it on drums. But, guitars, I've done it, keyboards, vocals, I have not. So I have to say I've done it on keyboards and guitars. Okay. But, maybe backing vocals. I don't know if I'd do it on a lead vocal, but I don't know. You know, I would just say try it. If you haven't done it, try it. That's when you find out some really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So.
No, I could see that making things feel huge.
Yeah. That's so cool. It's definitely interesting. All right, so next we're going to talk about layering, right? I think we talked about this a little bit the other week, but so layering, so you know, like with keyboards, for example, right? So you've got like a little keyboard riff like that's playing through the verse of a song. Instead of using just one sound, you know, you can use that same riff and just, you know, bring in a different sound with a synth or guitars, right? So like, you know, you have acoustic guitar and electric guitar play the same part, right? And you know, maybe pan them left and right, or maybe make them right on top of each other, right? So they double it. So it's just one more thing that adds depth to the mix and interest. Layering with vocals, you know, coming into a chorus, doubling the vocal, you know, maybe panning it, you know, left and right, or, you know, right down the middle. So it just creates some more depth. And what's kind of cool about layering the vocals is that if you're just not copying the track, you're actually recording the lead vocal track a couple of times, and you have those differences in timing and, you know, can add a really cool, you know, characteristic to it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we do that a lot with just using a lot of different vocal takes and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it sounds big.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds really big, especially when you're like, sending it like left and right and just opening it up a little bit. So. Yeah. Number 8, modulation effects. So that's, you know, chorus, phaser, flanger. Anytime you throw like a chorus on something, that's definitely going to give it a nice like stereo spread, right? Because you're dealing with the like phase issues on there from the chorus. Same thing with phasers. Flangers can almost give like that, like phasers and flangers can kind of give it like almost like a 3D sound.
Yeah.
But those are, you know, I would say the chorus is probably more widely used. Flangers, you know, that's a particular sound. I don't know. Have you ever worked with like flangers?
Yeah,
in the
I've
mix?
Messed with all three of them. The only one I currently have is, at least in like physical pedals for guitar, is a chorus pedal.
Yeah.
And I use probably chorus the most, but I love the sound of a phaser. Eddie Van Halen loved a phaser.
Yeah. All right. So up next we have compression. So we talked a little bit about side chaining, right? So you can get some depth to your mix with like doing the side chain where the one instrument ducks behind another depending on, you know, where, who it's sidechained to. Like that guitar riff you were talking about, you had it sidechained to the lead vocals. So when the vocal comes in, that lead, that little guitar riff ducks behind the vocal. So that's creating some depth. And the other thing too is with compression, you want to be careful not to overly compress everything in the mix, because that's going to make the mix sound really flat, right? So you want to have, you know, some more dynamics with the vocals, probably on drums, right? Depending on the type of mix you're going for, because if you have less compression on the drums, for example, they're gonna pop out, right? They're gonna, you know, be more dynamic rather than like a heavily compressed, you know, drum like in EDM. It's like it's all compressed. There's no dynamic range. It's just that. So yeah, I would just say just be careful about how much compression you want to use. You're using. Just so you don't make everything like super flat. So, you know, play around with that.
Yeah. And guitars don't need a lot of compression and a lot of, I mean, it depends the sound you're going for.
Yeah. I would say it depends on the sound you're going for.
But,
right.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So, next up, number 10, ambient samples. Now, this is kind of unusual. I'm trying to think of, did you ever listen to Feist, Leslie Feist,
mm-mm.
her first album? She had some really cool stuff where she was doing on there. So she kind of used some like found sounds, like some recorded sounds that she would, you know, like just sounds of like her walking, like walking upstairs, something like that. And that, you know, she kind of incorporated that into songs, or like sounds of like, you know, people talking, you know, in the background,
yeah,
or something
yeah.
like that. So that's a little on the more experimental side. But, yeah, that's some pretty interesting stuff you could do there.
Yeah, and that first, the first song on our, well, how we have it structured now, the first song has the, that Can't See the Bride song we're, like, talking at the beginning of.
Yeah.
It. Yeah. That's cool. Like,
yep.
Nature Sounds or
nature
something.
Nature Sounds.
MGMT, they do a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah, those guys are cool.
Yeah.
I like them a lot.
Yeah, there's a lot of those, like, guys that are, you know, maybe one instrumentalist, like a bass player, a guitar player, and then guys with a laptop. The other guy has a laptop, and that's it.
Right.
But, yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah.
They use a lot of those. So.
Yeah. So that's, you know, that's one. And then number 11, stereo wideners. So you're probably familiar with this. You know, for, well, you have the Slate subscription, right? So you've got the SSL wideners in there. And then also within Ableton itself, the utility plugin allows you to, you know, widen the stereo field with that as well. So that helps you to create more depth with the, within your mix. Just be careful using those. I would just say be careful using the wideners too much, because you can definitely create some phase issues with your songs. But, you know, that's one more tool. So I would say overall, if you, you know, creating depth in your mix is just using a combination of all these different techniques. And it's really the contrast between the different techniques that are going to, you know, give you that depth, right? So you've got like a short delay on a guitar, and you've got some nice, you know, hall reverb on that piano. You know, so it's just mixing and matching and, you know, using your ears and deciding what, you know, because you have an idea of what your mix is, what you want it to sound like, right? And what we want it to sound like isn't necessarily how it always comes out, but that's kind of the cool thing about the process of mixing is you're, you know, it's kind of like taking you in its own direction, what it wants to be.
Yeah.
So... But anyway, so those are the 11 techniques that you can use to create more depth in your mix. And thanks for listening. And be sure to, you know, like our YouTube channel.
YouTube.
Right.
Instagram. Spotify. Follow us on Apple Podcasts. Everywhere you get your content, we are.
And review us too if you like what you're hearing. Hopefully you do.
For sure. Yeah, I don't think there's many other music production focused podcasts like this that are, you know, really education based, right? So, yeah, if you're learning like I am, I learn
like
new
me.
Stuff
I'm learning.
Episode. Yeah,
I you know, there's a thing the Buddhists have. It's called beginner's mind, right? So if you approach everything as a beginner, you're always keeping yourself open and you're always learning and always progressing. So anyway, thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And we'll catch you in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
Peace.
Peace.